Well, hello again and welcome to another episode of the Hyperion Adventures Podcast. I'm Tom. As always, I'm with my wonderful, intelligent, gorgeous, very hardworking, and boy, so this week, audio animatronic loving wife and co-host, Michelle.
Well, thank you, sweetie, very much for that. And hi, everybody.
So good to have you with us. We are recording this episode on Sunday, April 7th, 2024. Getting set for the big solar eclipse that happens tomorrow. After, as we're recording this, maybe it's already happened as you're listening to this, but it's kind of an exciting thing that's happening across much of the country. Much of the country is going to get a really, really good view of it. We're here, we're getting about a 65%, something like that, view of it here in Central Florida.
Right.
But it's exciting either way.
Yeah, it's something that doesn't come around very often.
Yeah, I guess I was watching the news this morning and they said if we happen to be here in Central Florida in, I think it was 21 years,
right,
we are getting a full solar eclipse here. It'll cross here in 21 years. So
ready,
mark it on the calendar, start the countdown.
That'd be funny if you got like an M&M per day till then.
Here we go. And you think some of your Disney trips are far off in the future.
Right.
Nothing compared to the next solar eclipse. But we hope you get a chance to get out and experience it. Be safe out there. Be sure and look at it through certified glasses that can do it, or use some sort of projection device, because you don't want to end up burning up your retinas, that's for sure. But it is kind of a cool experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. Excited.
I heard somewhere that in Texas, like the rental cars have gone up like 400% over what they normally do at this time of year, because there's so much of an influx of people going to try and see it where it's at its totality.
Yeah,
you know, along that line.
That makes sense, I guess. But yeah, wow, that's going to be crazy. Yeah, it's going to be, Texas is going to have a lot of fun for sure with this.
Yeah, I hope so, because I heard that they may have some clouds and that it may be disappointing for some of the state,
right?
Not all of it, but some of it. So fingers crossed that anybody who made the trip out there or who lives there in general, I can get a good view of that. And so very cool. As for today's show, thank you for joining us today. In the future, you can find us most everywhere you get podcasts. However, the very best place to find us is on our own website, HyperionAdventuresPodcast.com. Also, we are on social media. We are on Twitter at Hyperion Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. If you are on Facebook, come on over and join us for some good, positive Disney energy fun on our Hyperion Adventurers Facebook group. Also, we're on YouTube. If you want to find us there, we're at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. And if you ever want to contact us for any reason, please hit us up at our Gmail account, HyperionAdventuresPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we love hearing from you in any of those fashions.
So. Yep. Every one of them, it's always a great way, and it's a great to hear from you whenever we do. We got reached out to by the person, we mentioned him last week, his name is Chris, and he was the one who basically nailed our mission statement that we were trying to be an oasis in of positivity in the sea of negativity, or the desert, I should say, of negativity out there in the world. And he sent a nice email, you know, saying some great things about the show and asking some questions. He's trying a podcast of his own, in which we said we would be listening to and give him some, what we, our critiques were of it. And we gave him some pointers on, you know, how to make it a successful show. And I can't wait to listen to it. I believe it's called Mazas or Mazes. I'm sorry, Chris. I apologize. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly. But Mazas Musings or Mazas Musings podcast. Go check it out for yourself as well.
Yeah. So it was so exciting. Like any of the times that people, you know, share some wonderful comments with us, obviously we love that. But we just also enjoy the interactions, the fun interactions, the daily. Like I know you send out the daily hello and greeting to everybody, but the responses we get from a lot of folks too, it's just really heartwarming.
Yes. So please go check it out. And we love hearing from all of you. Just as Michelle said, thank you so much for anybody who ever reaches out to us, ever, ever, ever. We appreciate you so much. As I told Chris in that email, you know, one of the benefits that we was unexpected in doing this podcast were the friendships that we've made. We went into this not knowing if anybody would ever listen to us, and then, you know, having a decent amount of people listen to us, and then making these wonderful friendships, some to some people we have not even ever met in person yet.
But we feel we know them so well.
It makes it that much more special doing this every week. But the most special thing is doing it with my sweetheart.
Aw, thank you. Love it every week.
Speaking of special things every week, you know, we are the Disney podcast of positivity. So before we get into the meat of every episode, we like to take a look back at the week that was. We call it My Favorite Thing from This Week. It's the highlights, the wonderful moments, those positive moments from the week that was. And when we do this, we always start with Michelle because she's fantastic. She's wonderful. She's all things great in the world. You're about to hear it. She does the best research. You've heard it in the past, and I think you're going to hear it next week. She definitely has the best lists. She also has the best My Favorite Thing from This Week. So, Michelle, what was your favorite thing from this week?
Well, my favorite thing from this week was having the opportunity to go to Epcot during the week with my sister, who hasn't been to the parks in several years. And so it was really a treat to get to experience that through the eyes of somebody who hasn't seen it in a long time. Definitely new to all the front part of the park that has evolved recently.
World Celebration area.
Right. Mm-hmm. And showing her that and some of the fun things around there and some, you know, kind of pointing out some of what's coming ahead too. But just getting to experience that with her and Jerry. I don't know that she's been to a festival in quite a long time. So that was fun.
Yeah. Looked like you guys had an amazing time, and so happy that you got the chance to experience that. Yeah. I had to work this week, so I didn't get to go, but that's okay. It looks like you guys just on your own. I would just distract from it. You guys had a fantastic time, just the two of you. Saw some great pictures. Looked like you were talking about it, all the amazing things you did, the great food you tried. And so glad for you and for your sister, Helen, that that was able to take place.
Thank you. Yeah, we weren't sure when we got to the entrance to where you go through for parking. It was pretty significantly backed up and everything, but surprisingly, the park wasn't that overflowing, and it was pretty easy to get to the festival kiosk. So,
which I got a little worried for you because I was at work and I just happened to take a pause down during a break and check social media, and I noticed that there's posted that they had actually stopped park hopping on that day. It was Thursday of this last week to Magic Kingdom because it was so busy. I'm like, uh-oh. They went out there and it's going to be absolutely packed. Right. But you said there were a lot of people there, but for the things that you wanted to do, it didn't hamper anything that were in your plans.
Right. I think that most people who were there were, from out of state or, out of the area and had planned to do dining, for example, in the restaurants and the quick service. And they weren't as... I guess they just didn't go to as much of the festival areas as I would have expected. So that made the lines really fast. I mean, most of them for us were pretty much walk up.
I was very glad to hear that because I did get worried during the day, especially your sister purchasing a ticket just to go out there with you and have a good time. I'm like, oh no, she's going to come back and it's going to be like, oh, there's so many people. Right. Oh my goodness. But no, it wasn't that way. So I'm so happy it turned out well for you.
Thank you.
That could be my favorite thing this week as well. But instead I'll go with a couple other things. Uh-huh. I'm going to start with that Disney Wish, the film Wish, finally hit Disney Plus this week. Unfortunately, but up to this point, we had not been able to see it because of the fact that it was just difficult, especially when Scott's with us, to get to the theater. We planned on doing it when we were on our last Disney cruise, but it just didn't sync up schedule-wise when it was in the theater for us to view it there as well. So finally, it hit Disney Plus, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really well done. The music, I already knew them. I've heard the music. I knew it was great.
Yes.
But I thought the story was good. I thought the animation style, I loved it. I loved it.
Yes.
I thought it was this, you know, kind of this cool influence of the hand-drawn, but definitely CG and the way they were able to blend that, but the classic backdrops, the set pieces that they used. It was just a beautiful, beautiful film.
Yeah, it did have a beautiful look to it. Like you said, a new story, because it was for the 100th anniversary and it wasn't based like some of the past animation films come out based on like fairy tales or whatever. So this was a new story and it really did, I thought, do a great job of capturing essence from all Disney animations. And I thought they did a great job with it.
So many Easter eggs in it, yes. Some that we picked out, others that I'm sure we're still yet to find. Right. So it will be a great rewatch as well. Disappointed it didn't do as well in the theaters because I think that, and I've heard it's doing well right now on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. I hope that, you know, maybe it gets a little of like what had happened to Encanto when it hit Disney right. Plus and it, you know, catches a little momentum, because I think in the future, and I think actually Tony, the Disney dad, mentioned this on social media to us, that he thinks it's going to be like one of those films that could be thought of, you know, some 5-10 years down the road as like one of those underrated films sure. that, you know, really everybody loves.
Right.
I could see that happening hopefully sooner than waiting 5 or 10 years right, down right. the road. But, and also I'm going to say this, you know, if you haven't gone and checked out, there's a ton of extras that they added yeah. on to it, and they are so good. If you want to look into the heart and the passion and just the creativity that is in the Disney animation team, the group that right. put this together, go check those out, because it is a great glimpse into how this film came about, the making of it, and just their heart and soul that they put into every project.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting, and it makes you appreciate the film that much more.
Yes, and I have to say that we didn't hurt that our good friend Dan yeah. Abraham, who's been on the show, was mentioned as the person that kind of had the pitch, kind of the main idea to what the final look of Star was going to
pivotal.
Be. Yeah, so that even though he wasn't focused on in this, there was a little piece in there. We're like, yeah, Dan, good job.
Way to go.
Also, another favorite thing from this week, and we'll get to this more in the Disney Stories of the Week, was kind of the pivot that happened between Wednesday and Thursday, because Wednesday was the Disney shareholders meeting. And while there were some great things that came out of it and a couple interesting things that people love, there was still a lot of talk especially on social media, of like, oh, they didn't really announce anything, right. nothing coming. And then on Thursday, like, it went crazy. And like, everybody's like, wow, look at that. And oh my goodness, look at this. And I thought the pivot was just hilarious yes. to me as I was watching it on social media happen. Yeah, it was funny to me.
It was great.
So I'll tell you one thing. It's not my favorite thing from this week is what just happened about 10 minutes before we started recording.
No.
When I spilled my glass of water on our board. So I had to pull out the emergency old board. So if it sounds a little different, maybe it sounds better. I don't know. If it sounds a little different today, please excuse us, because we are using a soundboard that is our old soundboard.
Right. And it was one that we ended up having to replace because it was kind of iffy at times for whether it was going to record or not. And so we're hoping we get through this episode.
Just, come on, baby, you can do it. I think I can.
Maybe giving it that break for several months is a help.
It's just happy to be pulled off the bench. It's like, whoa, thank you. Maybe it's the one that made me actually drop the water on the other board. Right on the other board. Like, it wasn't like it was around it. Like, my glass of water went right onto the board.
I know. And it's so funny because we take so many precautions in the way we have our office set up that won't happen. But, you know, there are unexpected things that happen in life. And
yeah, hoping the board survives it. Yes. We'll see what happens. But either way, we're still able to bring you a show, as we try to do every week. Speaking of this week's show, we have lots of stuff for you this week, including, as we mentioned, the Disney shareholders meeting took place this week. And there were a few interesting things that came out of it. Then we call it Imagineering debuted on YouTube with a few tantalizing looks to the future. Boy, were they really cool stuff. And Season of the Force kicked off at Disneyland Resort this week with a lot of fun additions. We'll tell you about that as well. But that's later. Let's go ahead and get to our very audio animatronic main topic of the week.
Yeah.
for this week's main topic. You know, we were thinking about it, and boy, it's even more prevalent this week. The information, some of the information we'll be talking about later, maybe Michelle will be mentioning it somewhat during this episode, but, you know, one of those great things that really Disney has brought about and has evolved through the many, many years at the parks were those characters that aren't actually actors, but they are such key parts to the role and of course to the each attraction, to each ride. And of course, we're talking about the audio animatronics. Right. And I think that, you know, I mean, Disney attractions wouldn't be Disney attractions without them. Mm-hmm. And so Michelle decided, hey, let's take a little bit of a Michelle deep dive into it. So I can't wait to hear what this, because you know, Michelle always does the best research. So Michelle, tell us a little bit about what we're talking about this week.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So good.
I know.
It's going to be great.
You know, and I'm sure you can agree with this, honey, that when I, throughout the week working on this project here, I kept saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what it's going to be about. And I think it's because there's just so much you could talk about with audio animatronics. There's so many different aspects about, you know, whether you're looking at how do they tell or how is their role in storytelling or how are they created or whatever. I mean, there's just like a kajillion different approaches. And I was like, oh, how am I going to edit this down to one single episode about audio animatronics? So bear with me, folks. Hopefully I am successful.
See, the way she always hedges her bets on these things, whenever she does that, I guarantee you, it's going to be magical. It's from Michelle, so you know it's going to be magical. So I can't wait to hear all about the artistry of Disney's audio animatronics from Michelle.
All right. Well, thank you. The way I ended up deciding to approach this is I really took a cue from Dan and Trent, those amazing creators of Once Upon a Studio. And during their interview here, they said they decided to create a film they wanted to see. And so that's kind of the approach I took, is like, what would I want to know about the nearly 6,000 audio animatronics used worldwide in Disney parks?
Wow, know. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And, you know, so what I kind of realized is I have always been impressed, as we've done our podcast, not about our podcast, but about the...
I've always been impressed with our podcast.
Please, let's edit that out. Let me try this again. What I've been impressed with the Disney company, and if you listen to any of our deep dives on the year that we were celebrating their 100th anniversary, each decade they were faced with some tremendous barriers and obstacles, and just how well they were able to be very creative at heading these problems face on and coming out of it even better of a company than they were before. And a lot of times not with their original plans, things had to pivot. And it was always very amazing to see how that was done. I mean, if you remember, even from like when Walt was faced with his film distribution company that, you know, he was contracted with, putting up barriers of what they would release. And how did he address it? He came up with his own distributing company. I mean, it's just very bold ways to handle issues. And if you think about it, the Disney company is very much like the fairy tales that they tell, like the protagonist being challenged and having to very bravely become triumphant over the unexpected twists and turns that they're faced with. So that's how I decided to approach this. What were some of the challenges that the Imagineers were faced with in dealing with the improving or developing technologies of audio animatronics?
Cool. I can't wait to hear all about this, because I know there had to be several challenges, and some, you know, self-made, others that mm-hmm. were just kind of just natural in fact, but I can't wait to hear how this developed and what happened. And I know Michelle's going to do a great job with this.
All right. Well, you know, let's start with the Tiki Rooms, because that's really where that technology, you know, well, first of all, got dubbed by Walt as audio animatronics. I mean, there were animatronics in industry that were not as famous. And in fact, I saw some images that were like scary, creepy looking images. Like, why did they even create that? But when it came to Disney, you know, and you talked about that new series that just came out, it's named, we call it Imagineering, and how they talked about the bird that inspired Walt to have the Imagineers start creating audio animatronics. And so it kind of really developed with first with the Tiki Room. And so challenge one is it had never been done like this before. And so to think about that and the fact that the way they're going to approach this is not just one audio animatronics, but a cast of over 200. Mm-hmm. So think about that, that over 200 different characters performing. I mean, talk about moving parts. Each one had to be designed, prototyped, programmed, synchronized with the others. I mean, that is an amazing feat if you think about it, of pulling this together, of something that has never been done before. There was the Imagineer and Disney legend, Alice Davis. She actually described Walt's ability to excite and motivate people to get through some of these, you know, what he said, it's fun to do the impossible. And this is what she said. This is a quote. She said, he, meaning Walt, always asked you to do something that was far beyond what you thought you were capable of doing. And he always made you surprise yourself by reaching that goal. You know, and I think that's what's, you know, critical here is having that driving force to say, don't get stopped by your challenges. You can go beyond them, you know, and he lived that. So it made sense that he shared that with his Imagineering team. But so talking about the team, let's look at one of the other issues that they were faced with, and that has to do with wardrobe. Now, again, another Disney legend, Harriet Burns, who is considered the first lady of Imagineering, that she, along with her team, were the ones that were putting the feathers on the birds. And as legend says, there was some challenges of trying to find out what product do you use for the bird's chest to be able to expand and contract, showing that they're breathing, right? And the way the story goes and what she has shared in her interview is that during a meeting one time, Walt was there with a cardigan sweater, and she saw how it moved at his elbow when he moved his arms, and she realized something like that was the solution that the Imagineering team was looking for in being able to have the birds be costumed to show their ability to breathe.
Yeah, and that's really cool and really imaginative thinking for sure. And I think, I apologize, I'm not trying to steal any of your thunder, no. But I think we see it up to this day as we watched, we call it Imagineering, mm-hmm. and they were talking about putting together Lewis,
right.
The horn-playing alligator, of right. course, and the fact that the way he has to move and everything that they have to put together, not only the pieces of this animatronic, but also, you know, what they put on his body to make it be able to move and look natural
right.
in various different positions. And I think it's fascinating. And then we also heard that even about Tiana, in mm-hmm. that the team of one was putting the costuming on Tiana and the other one that was putting on, you know, making the movements
right.
and how they would have to work together. Because, you know, the costume works great, but then if you move it, it doesn't look as great. And
right.
then, you know, okay, well, the movement's great, but now the costuming's not as good. So kind of that compromise that had to go on to make sure that, and that goes on for all these animatronics,
right.
even back to the very originals, like you were talking about there with the Tiki Birds.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's not like a one size fits all kind of thing. Like once you solve that problem, you're good to go for all the rest of the animatronics that you, or audio animatronics that you create. Each time you have a project, you're going to be faced with something to do with the costuming. And I think that's kind of an interesting aspect that it, although they're learning and the technology is improving, it's still something that they have to, like you said, work together as a team to make it be the best product it can be. Now, another little fun fact about clothing and audio animatronics. At one time I was on a tour there at Disney, and they were talking about how they have to maintain and clean the clothes, for example, with It's a Small World. And they said, you know, most time people think of stains and wear and tear on the external part of clothing, you know, like with kids, where is it going to wear out? It's going to be at the knees. With audio animatronics, it's the inside, the underneath part of the clothing that is the one that's getting the wear and tear. And so that those are the areas that they have to be most careful about and attentive to when they're maintaining and cleaning those attires.
Wow. That's interesting stuff.
Yeah. Now, before we get off of the topic of Tiki Room, I do have one fun fact. I don't know if you knew this. I didn't until I did this research, but you know the four main showbirds?
Yes.
Each of them are wearing feathers that represent the countries that they're coming from.
I kind of thought that when you look at them, but I don't know if I ever saw it officially put out there, but it totally makes sense,
right?
Because they does fit,
yeah.
You know, each of them, like Michael, the very, you know, famous, you know, all those Irish parrots,
right,
that exist out there. It's very green in color. You know?
It's that attention to detail,
right,
that you may or may not notice. Yeah. Very good. All right. So let's move on to another set of audio animatronics that generated multiple really big obstacles for the Imagineering team. And of course, we're talking about It's a Small World. Now, this originally was created for the New York World's Fair. But why do you think this was creating challenges? Well, let me tell you. First of all, they were given this opportunity to create the pavilion with less than a year's notice. I mean, there's a real great story behind there. I'm not going to go into it now, but just thinking about it, from the start of the concept of what they were going to do until opening day was 9 months.
Yeah, you can go back to our World's Fair episode,
right,
that we did. Gosh, it's probably been 3 years now since when we did that episode. Yeah, Michelle, well, another great research piece by Michelle. Go back if you want to hear more of that story. Go back to that episode.
Yeah. So, but I mean, thinking about any project, any big project, having only 9 months to put it together is just phenomenal to think of. And what really complicated this deadline even more so is that the Imagineering teams were already knee deep in three other major projects for the New York World's Fair that was going on at that same time. So their resources of not just manpower, but brain power was really being stretched to its maximum. But again, Walt was not one to shy away from a challenge and, you know, said, no, we're going to create this fourth pavilion. And this fourth pavilion was going to have 240 audio animatronics in it. So a lot to create there. And they all, again, had to be costumed. Originally, there was thought, all right, let's just dress them up and they'll be cute. But attention to detail, they wanted that, you know, Walt and his team wanted that there be authentic representation from all parts of the world that these audio animatronics were being used for. And so that was a ton of research. And again, this was before internet, and you're having to try to find remote areas of the world being represented, and sometimes in these, and how do you make the colors, the textures, the jewelry and everything be authentic to represent those parts of the world? So I mean, that to me, coming face to face with these challenges had to be so mind-boggling.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about, we're not talking dressing five audio animatronics.
Right.
And what was the number you gave again?
240.
240. So you have to, and obviously they're not individual costumes, 240 individual outfits, but there were, you know, I mean, they're grouping within the same. So there's some like the, you know,
right,
the hula
styling,
girls,
yes.
You know, there's, what are they, five hula girls, six hula girls, something like that,
yeah,
there. You know, so that covers, you know, five, six of them.
Right.
Still, just think about how many groupings there are right. from so many different parts of the world. And to, like you said, no internet. It's pretty incredible that yeah. they can come up with as much great detail work. And you can still see it to this day when you ride It's a Small World.
Exactly. Now, another Disney legend, Alice Davis, who was responsible for designing the costumes of It's a Small World, she gave a cute story that happened during this process involving Walt. She was being interviewed for the Walt Disney Family Museum, actually. And she said, "We had lots of problems with the dolls, with the skin tearing, like with the Can-Can girls." She said, "We had to put long pantaloons on them below the knee because the skin would keep tearing with the constant kicking. And I remember just before the show opened, Walt and a couple dignitaries were coming around in the boat and I was up on the bridge leaving. And Walt called out to me and he said, 'Alice, how come you put long pants on the Can-Can girls?' And I knew he wouldn't want a long explanation. I said, 'Well, Walt, you told me you wanted a family show.' And with this, I ran and they laughed and everything was fine." Just a little behind the scenes there you go. Little story I like there.
It. I like it. That's funny.
So one last thing about It's a Small World is if you think about it, it was created for the 1964 World's Fair. So that makes this year the 60th anniversary of It's a Small World.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So if you haven't been on in a while, this is a year to go and, you know, just kind of reminisce and remember that and think about the fact of what they went through and that it was 60 years ago that this creation first debuted.
I guess we may have to ride it this year or when Scott's with us, ride
exactly.
it like 18 times this year. Since it's one of his favorites.
It is.
Yeah. And one of yours, if not your favorite.
I know. It does have a lot of nostalgia for me, for sure. All right, moving right along. Let's look at another interactive audio animatronic character like Mr. Potato Head. Now, again, there were a lot of aspects associated with this that were challenging and more unique. First of all, the fact that there's a vast amount of dialogue programmed into this audio animatronic compared to most. Most have, you know, up to a couple minutes maybe, or, you know, a line here or there. This audio animatronic has about 20 minutes of audio that was programmed into it. And also it was designed to have its mouth move, not just the opening and closing like previous audio animatronics were doing. But the real challenge that the Imagineers took on for this was their goal to have Mr. Potato Head be able to actually remove and reattach one of his ears. And I mean, that's a pretty tall order there. And if you've seen the movies, he does do that from time to time. So it's great that they considered that detail into it. But if you think about all the steps and details that they needed to work out with that, you know, the arm movements, for example, but keeping the body parts proportionate to what the actual Mr. Potato Head on the screen looked like, you know. And so what Imagineers said is that they, first of all, they had to use reverse engineering to figure out how to make this happen. And they said it was all about geometry. So that is one of the millions of reasons I would never be qualified for a job in Imagineering. Now, I love math, all types of math, but geometry, big weak point for me.
I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
But kudos to them. And again, the fact too, when we're talking about the dialogue, that they did incorporate a way that, yes, they have a loop that goes, but they can also pause that loop and have a real person behind a control board interacting with the guests related to some of the features and selecting which comments and movements the Mr. Potato Head would do as part of that conversation.
Yeah, it was always, it was a little bit more so when Toy Story Mania's and Midway Mania now at Disneyland, at least in Disneyland, its queue was more, it used to be a little bit more out front, but they just had so many people that they've moved it more to an indoor area
right.
as a portion of it. So you don't get as many people constantly in front of right. Potato Head there. So you don't get quite as much interaction as you used to. You still right. get it, and it's still great.
Right.
But not as much as you used to. But yeah, I mean, when you think about the fact that he can do something like that, I mean, it's one thing if it's always had its hand on its ear.
Right.
You know, so then it's just attached there, and you just take right. it out, and you put it back in, whatever. But the fact that it's, you know, it's a free-flowing hand, it's moving, it's making different gestures, right. whatever, and then it needs to, at certain times, come up and hit that exact spot, grab that ear, be able to remove it, right. grab it, remove it, and then get that exact spot, even more difficult, right. it seems like, to actually insert it back in,
right.
is it, what seems simple is pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And when you look at his hands, he's got these very large, rounded fingers and everything. Yeah, it's just incredible of a feat that they accomplished there.
Yeah. Yep, a little bit more modern, and that was the kind of the start when we were starting to see more of these phenomenal audio animatronics. I mean, they've always been developing through the years.
Right.
But I think that was a big leap forward when they completed Potato Head. There.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Mr. Potato Head. Sorry, I'm giving him the due respect he deserves.
So another area of advancement with audio animatronic technology came into play with the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. What their big challenge, though, was how do you take these characters that are so incredibly well known? I mean, people, it's burnt into their memory what these characters look like, but we've always seen them as 2D characters. And how do you take those and create 3D audio animatronics that people will find believable? And so although they had technology that had advanced that made more fluidity and movement, again, they had to make sure the authenticity of the look was there. And so what they did was they worked very closely with Walt Disney Animation Studios to really make sure that every aspect along the process of developing these characters were authentic looking. And it made the Imagineers really have to study details in the film of how each of the characters moved, how their facial expressions and movements as they, you know, were talking came into play. And I think that's what is so key, like in that attraction, that the audio animatronics are believable. You do feel like that Dopey is exactly like we remember him in the film.
Yeah, I know that Disney has gotten some criticism for that attraction and for Frozen Ever After. Mm-hmm. That
with the
that they've used the projection faces mm-hmm. on there. But I think if you actually look at those animatronics and you take that away from it, they're pretty phenomenal, the right. way they move, just like you were talking about
yeah.
there. You know, and it doesn't bother me the way it bothers some people mm-hmm. with the projection faces. I get it. I'd rather have them like what they're doing now with
right.
with Tiana's Bayou Adventure with actually full moving faces. But, you know, I think it's also, it still is strong. The characters are strong. And the actual movements like you were talking about
right.
are so spot on to what you see in the films that I think it overcomes that for the most part.
Right, right. You know, and I mean, again, technology is developing, and so that's why now they can have that type of way of displaying facial movements, etc. But in order to make sure this attraction was able to get out there and still held true to what things look like you said, that's it may not have been ideal today as we look at it, but it still was better than, you know, having very little facial expressions coming through on some of these attractions.
Yeah, I mean, things are constantly in development. Mm-hmm. Things are constantly moving. And I do believe that they really wanted to get that a Frozen attraction going.
Right.
Especially for that one. Both that and Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. They wanted to get those attractions up and going as quickly as possible. So did they cut a corner there? Maybe. But they were able to get those attractions out there. And they're still both two of my favorites. Now, mm-hmm. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, a lot of times, and actually Frozen as well. I won't wait in that line
right.
for it for as long as it'll take sometimes. I love it, but I don't love it that much.
Right.
But when I do get to experience it, I enjoy both of them for what they are. And that's even with the projection faces
right.
on the audio animatronics.
Right, right. Exactly. So, All right. Now, in talking about challenges with audio animatronics, Disney actually has a long-term dilemma that they're faced with. The speed now in advances in our own personal technology really impacts what visitors are going to expect from the park. So, you know, kids are very technophile now, and it's just a part of their lives. And so Disney knows that they need to continue to devise these new generations of impressive attractions to continue the appeal for these newer generations. But what complicates that is the nostalgia factor. So how do you balance the love of what currently is there in some of these existing attractions, but still be able to create the things that are going to carry them forward with the next generations? You know, so that's something that they are dealing with. Now, one of the ways that they have looked to tackle this approach is routinely reviewing these attractions to see, as Walt used to say, pluses. And I think Bob Iger has taken on that terminology too. How can you plus some of these attractions, keeping them fresh, but increase maybe the technology application so it's still fresh in that way as well. And so you kind of see that obviously as they've improved the audio animatronics, like to Mr. Lincoln, where his movements are much more lifelike, you know. And so how can they do things like that in keeping the integrity of the nostalgic part of it, but providing the experience that is more technologically appropriate to these times?
And I think we saw some of that. I mean, what was it last year? I think when we had experience, we took the time and went to the American Adventure, mm-hmm. and the show there. For the first time in a long time, we knew they had added some new scenes and a couple other pieces, which they are refreshing that mm-hmm. attraction. Not all the time, but every once in a while, right. they add some new scenes, and since there's so much about American history involved right. with it or whatever. But they also added some scenes that dealt with some of the cultures, especially the indigenous people right. of our country. And they added in some wonderful new animatronics that, I mean, look, the animatronics for the American Adventure are pretty strong. They're right. really, really good. They added some new ones, especially for the part with the indigenous people, that were really, really exactly. good. And I think that's, you know, important, you know, to add as you keep going forward, you add it and you can see them stand out, all these right. audio animatronics, and how important they are and how just what pieces of art they are to put together and make work and tell a story.
Right. Well, even in our trip this week, my sister and I, she has not been on Spaceship Earth in quite a while. The last few times that she had been there, she skipped it, and she was blown away by the audio animatronics now compared to when she last saw that attraction.
Boy, it's been a while because they haven't changed.
I know
they're due to, you know, do something with that here sometime in the relative near future.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's good. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that just shows you. I mean, it's something that's relatively out of date.
Right.
But if you haven't been in a while, you're still amazed by how good it can be.
Right. And you know that the technology is still continuing. I mean, we mm-hmm. see that in the audio animatronic figures like the Shaman and the Nava River Journey attraction. And of course, our favorite Star Wars businessman, Hondo Naka.
Legitimate businessman.
Yes. In Millennium Falcon Run attraction. Such incredible technology being used and added there in those audio animatronics. Now, another type of animatronic that kind of grew from this increasing technology is the Stunttronic robot. Mm-hmm. He can be found outfitted in Spider-Man spandex there, performing very elaborate aerial tricks over at Disney's California Adventure at Avengers Campus. Now, one of the principal R&D Imagineer, Tony Dohi, I hope I pronounced his name right, said, quote, "So what this is about is the realization we came to after seeing where our characters are going on screen. Whether they be Star Wars characters or Pixar characters or Marvel characters or our own animation characters, is that they're doing all these things that are really, really active. And so that becomes the expectation our park guests have that our characters are doing all of these things on screen. But when it comes to our attractions, what are our animatronic figures doing? We realize we have kind of a disconnect here. So they realized they needed to progress with this. They've come up with these, in essence, stunt doubles for these shows, which kind of is cool because it really taps in on their history of Hollywood and filmmaking. It's you got now your stunt double that's going to come out and do this phenomenal feat that otherwise you wouldn't be able to experience.
Yeah. It's still something that takes my breath away every time we go to Avengers Campus. It's a must do. And I felt bad for poor Keenan and Rachel when they were there. They didn't get to experience Avengers Campus to its fullest when they took their first ever visit to Disneyland. Right. We talked to them a few episodes ago. The fact that they didn't get to see that Spider-Man because it's every time and still to this day, we'll be there and we'll be around people. We've seen it several times, mm-hmm. but people who've never seen it before. And it takes our breath away. It takes the gasps and the wows. And
right.
Oh my goodness. Of seeing this thing flying through the air.
Yeah.
It's very quick. You'll blink and you miss it, but it's spectacular when you see it.
You know, a fun fact there is he's programmed to not look perfect when he does the stunt. That he, you know, if you pay attention, you watch, he looks like somewhat flailing a little bit. And that is to have mimic, you know, Spider-Man, who's testing out new skills with his new suits and things like that, that it isn't perfect. But from an Imagineer's perspective, that's kind of difficult because they're creating these to work perfectly. And now they have to add that feature where it's flailing. It's kind of an interesting little challenge that they incorporated a solution to in that regards.
It looks real.
It does.
It looks extremely realistic. Like if you didn't know, like we know, and most of the people that are there watching it know. But every once in a while, there's somebody that doesn't know.
Right.
And they think that's a stunt person or whatever flying through the air. And, you know, if you didn't know, I can see why.
Right.
I mean, it looks so realistic.
It is. Yeah. They've nailed it. Yeah. So, one other fun fact here about this stunt-tronic, I should say, is he has a name.
Oh, I did not know that.
You didn't know? Any guesses? It's a marvelous name.
I don't know. I couldn't even guess.
His name is Tom. See, it's marvelous. Yeah, they named it after Tom Holland. And in fact, when Tom Holland...
Not me. It'd be a princess.
That's
it'd
true.
It'd be a princess if they named it after me. Let's be honest.
That's true. Yes, when Tom Holland actually was out in California recording his part in the Web Slinger attraction, the Imagineers actually had him sign the name, his name on the chest plate for the Stunttronic. And then what they did is they embossed it and placed it on all other 3D printed chest plates that they use for this attraction. So
really cool.
Yeah. Now, during an interview with the New York Times, specifically about the use of robots, and not necessarily just this robot, but other maybe ambulatory robots.
Mm-hmm.
Disney said they have no plans to replace human performers. They still see very much a need for those characters walking through the parks, etc. But they said the company's robotic initiative is more about the extreme characters that you might see, whether in Star Wars or Marvels, and meeting the challenge of bringing them to life, especially when they are maybe walking around the park, not necessarily within an attraction. So,
we're actually seeing, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to steal any of your thunder, but we're
wrapping
seeing
things up there anyway.
We're seeing some interesting more development. Because I remember when the Stunttronic was being talked about,
right.
And we didn't know, but everyone kind of assumed this might be a Spider-Man thing eventually.
Yes.
Well, now we're actually seeing some things come out in recent months, about over a year now, mm-hmm. of some audio animatronics that they've actually kind of put some faces to. And we know we don't know where they're going to be, mm-hmm. but we know that they exist out there and they're they're going to be making their debuts out in the parks before you know it.
Right.
We've seen a walk around Groot, mm-hmm. baby Groot, walk mm-hmm. around animatronic. We've seen what appears to be in a Judy Hopps
right.
that can do basically a somersault on its own. It's right. not like we're not in an area, like it can just go out there, be skating
right.
and then do a somersault right. on stage. And then there's a Duke Weaselton.
Yes.
On an animatronic that kind of just moves around on its own and can climb up onto like these set of boxes right. stand or whatever that these are the next. I mean, yes, we're talking about what we saw with Tiana's
right.
Bayou Adventure this week, mm-hmm. but these next things are, when you just see them working as they're getting ready, I cannot wait to see where they implement them because they are phenomenal right. looking. And you know that they're going to be that next step in audio animatronics.
Exactly. You know, so, you know, again, hopefully this has been somewhat interesting to people. You know, my passion again is taking a look at how being faced by challenges or barriers or taking on these phenomenal goals is just something that is very inherent to that. And I just love that. And a good way I think to sum it up is a quote from one of the Disney Imagineerings. He said, "All of this technology must disappear, which takes a crazy amount of engineering. We don't want anyone thinking that's the most sophisticated robot I've ever encountered. Instead, it has to be, look, it's Groot." So anyways, I think with audio animatronics, they continue, like you said, to push the boundaries of reality. And it's just great that what I also took away from this is the company is committed to continuing the expansion of and use of these technologies. It's not becoming stagnant.
No, I completely agree. What we've seen just this week is pretty indicative of that. And we've seen it, you know, going across in some of the Asian parks, some of the recent audio animatronics they've put right. out there, and some of the stuff that we're seeing, I was just talking about with the development of some new ones, and it's just going to continue on from there.
Right.
And there's a lot of new stuff coming. I'm telling you, D23 is going to be amazing this year.
Yeah.
The Parks and Experiences panel is going to be pretty incredible this year.
Right.
I cannot wait to see what the next things that are come out. And once again, Michelle is undefeated in a week where she's like, I don't know what I'm doing with this topic. Why did I come up with this idea? I don't know what course to take. Again, it was a phenomenal job, sweetheart.
Well, thank you.
Really well done.
And
another amazing research
compliments.
piece by Michelle. Really good. And you know, hey, look, animatronics, some people are creeped out by them, but I think what would attractions be without them? I think they're phenomenal.
Right.
They're fantastic.
Yes.
And they just keep adapting.
Oh,
and
for
making
sure.
them even better.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one thing, you know, in was my initial struggle of which approach to go, it just confirmed to me that this is a topic that we could explore other aspects
Absolutely.
About. So.
100%. So, Michelle always does the best research. Thanks, sweetheart. And I always learn new things. So many new things. Who knew that I'm sure some of you knew, that the Stuntronics name was Tom.
There you go.
Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Thanks, sweetheart. Great job.
Well, thank you.
I just love all the stuff that Disney Imagineers come up with, but these audio animatronics we're seeing, and we're going to talk about it here very shortly. Amazing, amazing, amazing stuff.
Yeah, love it. Love the history of it and where they're going is just exciting.
Yeah, thanks again, sweetheart. Great job with that main topic of the week. Now, before we get to the Disney stories of the week, you know, we have to talk about our great friend Nate with Main Street and More Travel, because let's face it, we all have trips what we're thinking about taking in the very near future. Well, if you do, whether it be to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise, or anywhere in the world beyond, let me tell you, Nate is the certified Disney vacation planner that you are going to want to get in contact with.
Oh my gosh, for sure. You know, as we, you know, mention all the time, he really has firsthand knowledge of things, so he can really help you plan, customize a trip that is going to be the best for you, answer your questions. It's really concierge level planning that doesn't cost you anything.
High end. It is high end stuff that he will help you out with, answer all your questions. He is there for you to make sure your trip, wherever it may be the best it possibly can be. And as Michelle mentioned, no extra cost to you. That's because either Disney or whatever other travel branch that he works through pays him for you. Your what you end up paying is exactly what you pay. If you did all that work yourself, only you can save that time and just relax and enjoy and let him set it all up for you.
Right. And you know what? He may even be able to save you some money from you doing it alone, because he is on top of all the deals and steals that are out there.
Yeah. And there's never a guarantee, but let me tell you, if there's a discount out there, Nate will find it for you. So what you got to do is go to DizChipsAndMore.com, fill out the form there, and just contact him. Talk to him. Tell him what you want to do and let him get to work for you.
Right. So as Tom mentioned, once you fill out that form, Nate will be back in touch with you to start that planning. But be sure to tell him that Tom and Michelle sent you.
Yeah. Again, that's Nate with Main Street and More Travel. All right. Let's go ahead and get to the Disney stories of the week. I do have a few for you this week.
Yeah.
It's going to kind of be quick, but because I'm not going to hit on a lot of things in depth, but there was some interesting information that came out this week, and we'll be
for
talking
sure
about that. I'm going to start with the Disney shareholders meeting took place this week, and there were a few interesting things that came out of that. First and foremost, the meeting took place on Wednesday, April 3rd, and probably the most important thing to happen is a couple of groups that were looking to take seats on the board were roundly defeated by the shareholders, allowing the current group to, quote, stay the course, end quote,
as you will.
Bob Iger and that group, you know, they got some great endorsements by the likes of Michael Eisner, George Lucas. Yeah, some people, they stepped up and said, look, you know, maybe they've hit some stumbles along the path,
right,
but this is the group you want leading. And obviously the shareholders listened, including us. We put our votes in. That group easily kept hold of those seats.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, it was an interesting process, the whole sending of the emails and descriptions, and it was great to get that information and feel like we were making informed decisions.
Yeah, I think so. I think we made an informed decision. I think the shareholders came to the correct decision when it was all said and done. And I can't wait to see what's happening moving forward, including some of the stuff we're going to talk about here. So during that shareholders meeting, we did receive a new peek at Inside Out 2, which is hitting theaters in June. And a look at some of the artwork for Moana 2, which is, of course, coming in November. Excited for both those films.
Yeah.
And then we also saw some look at some other films that are coming out in the near future. Not much big news came out of that for Disney Parks fans, but we did receive a piece of concept art for an Avatar area that may be coming to the West Coast as a part of the Disneyland Forward plan that may get official approval very, very soon. So a lot more may be coming out about that here in the very near future. Definitely at the D20. I'm still going to call it the D23 Expo.
Right.
I know it's like the ultimate fan of Disney fan event or whatever, but I still think of it as the D23 Expo.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but something we'll definitely be watching in terms of what's going to the city of Anaheim for vote. So
it seems like it's going to fly through.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. It's not completely done yet. I think that's why Disney kind of hedged their bets on, you know, this could be there,
right,
you know, and of course it's still concept artwork, and what actually comes to fruition when it's all said and done may not 100% match up.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to draw these things up. It's actually another thing to actually make them work in a real world situation.
Exactly.
We'll see. But I think it's fascinating. I think it's interesting. And I heard, I think it was Frank and Jen from Dillo's Diz talking about this week, and you know, it's like, why another Avatar area? Is that Avatar really that popular? And I'll say this, we are not the biggest Avatar fans.
Right.
We're not. But I will say this also, that both films, one is the all-time leader in box office. The other is in, maybe the third. It's in the top five all-time of box office. So while we may not be the biggest Avatar fans, there still are a ton of them out there. And we've seen the lands. It's still amazing every time you walk into Pandora.
Yeah. Like you said, we're not huge fans. Not that we dislike it. It's just maybe we don't connect to it as much. But definitely enjoy going to those areas of the parks. The attractions are amazing, and you can enjoy it again. Even if you're not the biggest fan, you can appreciate and still have a great time and fun. So yeah. Love it.
I do too. I think it's great. I can't wait to see what this area becomes, because I love the whether or not we don't dislike the films. I just don't think we're as hugely into the Avatar films as some other people are. But we are always amazed when we go into those lands. And I think that this will be a wonderful addition to Disneyland, wherever they might put it. And who knows what else might come with it. So that was about, there were a couple other things, but that was the gist of it from the shareholders meeting. And a lot of people on social media especially were like, that was it. We didn't really get much out of it. And everybody most people kind of like, look, this is going to be about what's coming in D23. It's not about the shareholders meeting. It's a different audience that they're selling this to, not necessarily the park fans, etc. So, people begin to break down. Of course, the one thing that they got, which was the Avatar artwork, is it going to be a water park? Is there going to be a dark ride? What's it going to be? We'll see. I can't wait to find out. I'm sure we'll find out more about it in D23. But still, it was like, not much came out of it. And then Thursday happened. And suddenly, lots of stuff started coming down. Because we call it Imagineering debuted on YouTube.
Right.
Oh, and boy, did they have a few tantalizing looks into what is to come in the very, very near future here.
Great. Looks like a great series coming up there.
Yes. So we talked about it already, especially Michelle here. We looked at some of the audio animatronics that are going to be part of Tiana's Bayou Adventure. And then there's, a lot of people are like, is there going to be a lot of screens? Is it going to be more of the projection audio animatronics or whatever? No. And we already had seen Tiana at one point. We're like, wow, she looks great. But now we got to see some, not only Tiana, we got to see some of the other audio animatronics, and they are going all out on this attraction for sure.
Oh, definitely. And so one, obviously using the more advanced technology in this as well. But again, this series is really, for those of you who love the behind the scenes, they're sharing a lot of interesting components of how they're approaching this and what were some of the things that they're facing and how to address it. So it's a cool series.
I love behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. This was great. The extended view we got to see of the Tiana, just one of the Tiana. There's going to be several from what I understand, audio animatronics there. But the one Tiana audio animatronic, and I'm just sitting there and I'm watching it and I'm just going, wow. First in my head. And then the more I'm like, I can't believe what I'm seeing with this audio animatronic. It is so well done. Its movements, it's so smooth. It is the facial expressions. It's incredible.
Right. It definitely captures the essence of what you've seen in the film. And it is a very lifelike looking audio animatronic.
We also got an extended look at Lewis, of course, the horn playing alligator, as I mentioned earlier. And he's phenomenal, too. We got to see him without his skin.
Yeah.
and see how that moves to kind of explain what they have to overcome, as Michelle's been talking about, to get him. But then also with it on, they even had the voice actor of Lewis come in there, and he was taken aback by it, how amazing it looks. And we saw a little bit of Mama Odie as well, and how good she looks too. And that's just a few of them. I think we're going to see, we didn't see Prince Naveen.
Right.
We didn't see, some of the other characters that are going to be taking part out there. I was already super excited for Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
Right.
Now I'm like over the moon. Like, I cannot wait. And I know that, that attraction in its former incarnation was not your favorite attraction because of that one long fall at the end. But we're going to be going on that. And I can't wait to go on it because it looks amazing.
Right. It does. It does. It, yeah. It's, yeah, the drop isn't something that I'm thrilled about, but I am excited. I also love, and we're starting to really see them introduce that the new characters that are, you know, weren't in the film, but are going to be a part of this, the storytelling of getting the music together, getting a band together. And what is that band going to consist of? All these various animals, and how they really do pay tribute to the culture in New Orleans. And I love it. I think they each have their own little storyline of, you know, what, where they come from, what their being is about. And I love it.
Yeah. Animals. And I believe there's a couple of human characters within the band as well. So I think it's kind of a combination. It's multi-species. It's
all very right.
Cool. Yeah. can't wait to check it out. We thought maybe we might get an announcement this week of when it might open and when they might be doing some previews. I think that's coming very, very soon.
Sure.
As we see it taking more shape, more testing's being done. We're seeing more about these.
It'll probably be announced tomorrow after our episode.
Of course. It's being announced right now as we're recording. No, it wouldn't surprise me if it's this week. I think it's going to be very, very soon that we're going to start hearing about cast member previews and then pass holder, DVC, et cetera, previews down the pipe, and then an official general public opening day.
Right.
I couldn't be more excited for it all. Hoping we land one of those pass holder or DVC or whatever previews, when assuming they have them.
Right.
I'm going to assume they're going to do that. They did it for Tron. They did it for Pandora.
Right.
They did it for lots of things. I assume that they're going to do it for something like this as well.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's very exciting. Also, we basically received a complete confirmation, and we thought that this could be happening, but it's pretty much been confirmed on a little short that was in that, we call it Imagineering.
Right.
That Disney's Animal Kingdom Park's Dinoland is going to be transformed into, quote unquote, Tropical Americas themed area. Because they basically just showed a glimpse of a model of what that land is going to look like. I don't think that they have the model all put together.
Right.
If they're not planning on doing it. And I've also heard that they're getting ready, some construction areas ready. Like, this is happening. It wasn't just, you know, some people thought when it was announced at Destination D23 and they're like, oh, you know, it's more blue sky stuff.
Yeah.
No, this is happening.
Yeah.
That's what it appears. This is definitely happening.
Right. Agreed. And when we were at Destination D23, it just had an air more of, this is probably something that they're very much considering, not just blue sky. It didn't sound as out there. It sounded more like, get ready.
Yeah.
Going to hear more about this.
Again, I'm very, very excited about this, especially because it includes La Casita Madrigal.
Yes.
You know how what a big fan of Encanto is. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know if it's going to be a walkthrough attraction. I don't know if it's going to be a dark ride. Kind of, a lot of people are comparing it. Maybe it's going to be like a very Phantom Manor-ish, you know, kind of style thing. No matter what, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a great addition to that park. And Indiana Jones as well. I mean, it'll fit right in there. You know, it's going to be easy to do if they're going to do something similar to what they have in California, since the dinosaur is basically a different version of what they have in California. I think it could come together more quickly than many people think.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one, you know, and maybe that's, you know, they're going to be their approach, is that even though some things are going to be going away, we're going to get some things up and running quickly to have, you know, consistency in having some attractions available still.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of this, by the way, a lot of these stories came from Scott Gustin, who I've told you, if you're on social media, especially Twitter, go ahead and find him. He's at Scott Gustin, because he's really good at getting stories, like especially Disney Park stories, but also like Universal, everything theme park related. Like he gets it out there, and he's pretty much spot on with everything he puts out there.
Right.
It's not like, you know, it's not a lot of clickbait like you'll find out there.
Right, exactly.
His stuff is good stuff. And a lot of this, like Thursday, he was extremely busy. Like, some people were like, Scott, take a break. So just know that a lot of these stories came from him. I'm just going to give him credit across the board, whether or not I got it from him or not. I'm just going to give him a credit across the board because he does so much work. This one definitely came from him. What's beyond Thunder Mountain is looking more and more likely to be definitively announced at D23.
Mm-hmm.
He put out there that Walt Disney World is currently in the process of filing permits for development for work behind Magic Kingdom that will prepare the area for a future expansion expected to be the largest expansion in the park's history. During a Walt Disney Imagineering showcase earlier this week, Imagineers confirmed Disney will file water management permits in the next few weeks, marking the start of finding out, quote, what's beyond Big Thunder, end quote. So again, this was something that was blue sky back at D23 a couple years ago. People were like, okay, whatever. Right. Is anything ever going to come from this? They're filing permits, apparently. Something is going to come with this. What it's going to be, don't know yet. I bet you we find out at D23.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because again, you know, what little bit came out of the shareholders meeting, there was a question to Bob Iger regarding, you know, what's going on with Universal, with Epic, you know, and what is Disney going to do to kind of respond to that or keep up with the competition? And as he said, you know, first of all, they've already been in, you know, adding things and improving things, and that there's still that commitment to spend these billions of dollars for parks expansions and guest experiences.
I thought Bob Iger had a really good answer for that question, by the way. You know, the fact that, yes, it seems like Epic Universe is going up overnight,
right,
because that's all we see. And we very much live, especially in the social media world now, we live in the now.
Right.
And so everything is like, all this stuff is happening. And this just seems like it's happened over the last 2 years.
Right.
You know, whereas this has been in development. That's how these things go. If you're going to build a whole land, it's been in development for a long, long time. It's just more immediate right now. Meanwhile, because you live in the now, you don't focus on all the things that Disney has done over that period of time, and you forget about all the other stuff because maybe people are focused on their favorite parks or their favorite resort, whether it be Walt Disney World Resort. Everybody focuses that goes to that on that. You don't, you know, if you focus on Disneyland, what's going on with Disneyland if you're in Southern California or around that area. You forget about maybe about what's going on in all the Asian parks, what's happening currently at Disneyland Paris, what all these cruise ships. I've said it. This is the third week in a row where I'm going to say Disney's about to double their fleet within the next few years. You forget about that. You forget about, you know, these various different attractions that have popped up over that span of when Epic Universe was starting its planning up until when it's going to be completed next year. All this stuff is happening. And yes, maybe it, you know, obviously you'd love to see Disney do something big and make a big announcement, which I think there's going to be some big announcements coming this year. But they have been creating Pandora, two Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, just in within, and we're just talking the U.S. parks here. They did create, you know, Tron, you know, they have Ratatouille, you know, they're about to complete redoing Epcot. His answer was spot on. And it's good that he pointed out, look, we've done a lot.
Right.
It just may, because you forget about it because it's over time. It doesn't seem like it.
Right. And it's not, when you're looking at Universal, you're saying, okay, in Florida, this one big thing is happening. But as you explained, Disney has parks around the world that they're putting new things in each one. I mean, one of the things you didn't mention is the expansion over in Japan at Disney Sea that's opening in June. I mean, there are just, you know, if you were to line up all the things that Disney, even within the last couple of years, like 2 years or so, looking worldwide, you'd have an equivalent, I think, type of announcement as what Epic is. You have so many new lands and experiences.
Yeah. I'm happy for Universal. I do. I like Universal. We're not Universal people per se. That doesn't mean we don't respect what they're doing and are happy for everybody that is a Universal fan. And I love that there is kind of this competition.
Right.
And I don't know if it really is a competition, but, you know, anything that gets these different groups to, you know, get moving more forward is good for the theme park goers.
Right. And there are parts of Universal we love.
We love, like, we are big Harry Potter fans.
Yes.
So anything having to do with Hogwarts or Hogsmeade or anything that we are on.
Yeah.
We're just not the hugest coaster fans.
Right. Right.
Which is, I think, and we're not Halloween Horror Nights fans, you know? So it doesn't, those things don't draw us in as, you know, so and then Disney's right there and we're like, well, we love most everything at Disney.
Yes.
So if we're going to make our choices on where to go, that's usually where we're going to go. But that doesn't mean that, and SeaWorld for that matter. I mean, you know, SeaWorld's doing some interesting stuff as well. And I'm glad that they are. Yeah. You know, they're doing some phenomenal stuff here in Central Florida as well. And that's great. All of it is good. And all of it is good for theme park fans.
Exactly.
So very happy for all of that. So. Also, Season of the Force kicked off at Disneyland Resort this week with lots of fun additions. Yeah. The new missions of Star Tours, the adventure continues with the likes of Ahsoka Tano, Cassian Andor. Those debuted at Disneyland this week as well as at Disney's Hollywood Studios. Yes, you can see it there. And at Disneyland Paris. They got it first. I woke up in the morning and they were already like, hey, it's all happening at Disneyland Paris. It was very exciting. So the next time you go on Star Tours, you may get one of these new missions. Yes. And who knows what it's going to be. We're very excited about our next chance to be able to, you know, have, you know, fly with Purgles or have a Ahsoka Tano send us on a mission, or Cassian Andor saying he's been on this attraction since he was 6 years old.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's exciting stuff.
Very.
Yes. Your chance to get a photo with Sabine Wren began for a limited time at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland Resort, all during the Season of the Force. She made her appearance out there. We had a chance to get a picture with Sabine Wren back when the very first Star Wars night, way back when, but she hasn't been a regular character.
Right.
Glad to see people getting their opportunity now to do that. Yeah. Also debuting, the cuteness personified that are the roaming BD droids that are going through Disneyland's version of Black Spire Outpost. And the most, and I send it immediately to Michelle, the cutest social media posting were these little droids that look like ducks. And then there were actually a family of Disney ducks that came out by them. It was so, I almost died from the cuteness.
Right.
It was so wonderful. Such a wonderful moment.
Yeah. Glad you shared that. It really was kind of cute, a little ironic and fun at the same time.
Here, oh my goodness. It was cuteness overload. 100%. So good. So good. Also, Fire of the Rising Moon, which pairs fireworks over the spires of Batu and the music of John Williams, debuted. Of course, you could have always, whenever they did have fireworks at Disneyland, you could always go out. And we recommended it several times in our tips that it's a great place to check out fireworks for a different perspective, because it's right over the spires, right over the Millennium Falcon there where the fireworks are launched. You never used to get the music that you would get with it. It was still just the kind of low, regular music that would play in Batu.
Right.
But now they've decided, hey, let's embrace this and go ahead and play this John Williams music. And it was a big hit already, and people are already saying that it's been confirmed that it will continue past the Season of the Force. So even if you don't get a chance to get out there during this time, I think it runs till June 2nd or something along those lines. It sounds like it's going to continue on for you'll still have that opportunity. I think it's a great idea. Totally makes sense. I've heard some people like, oh, let's bring it to Disney's Hollywood Studios as well. I think, unfortunately, there's a couple strikes against that. I would love to see it, but I don't think it necessarily works. One, right now they don't really have a fireworks show at Disney's Hollywood Studios. Sure, they can have one. But the other problem lies in the fact that where those spires and the Millennium Falcon lie and they're where they are as compared to where they normally shoot the fireworks off at Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Right.
They don't face one another.
Right.
So you would have to like turn around the other way. You don't get the impact kind of, I think you could do it, but I don't think you get quite the impact you get at Disneyland.
Right. Yes.
From their version of it, unless they were to find a way to move where the fireworks are launched from, then maybe they might be able to do something different.
Possibly. Right.
But, unfortunately I just don't think the logistics work as it stands right now.
Right. Right. I do love the fact that it's not a new show. It's the show that's being portrayed in front of the castle over at Disneyland. It's just the location you choose to watch it from in the park gives you a different perspective, different feel. It's not the storyline that you're seeing over at in front of the castle. It works as a storyline being in Batu.
Yeah, I hope they keep it forever.
Right.
Because we love John Williams music. We love fireworks. We love Black Spire Outpost. We love Batu. Can't wait to have our opportunity to get back to Disneyland and check that out one night, because again, we sold it on, we've said it, sold it many times that it's a great spot to watch the fireworks from.
Even without John Williams music.
But you add that in, oh, it's going to be over the top for sure. Moving on, Test Track at Epcot will officially close on June 17th as it goes through its reimagining. We, again, another thing we saw at Destination D23, they announced there that this is going to be happening. Well, it's officially happening beginning on June 17th. That means your last chance to ride it in its current form is June 16th.
Yes. So that'll be fun and exciting. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah. And they showed some more concept art, and it really has a lot of World of Motion look to that concept art. And I hope that, something along those lines is where we go with this, and still the speedy finish at the end, of course, you know, you want that. But I think that some more interesting development in the dark ride portion of it would be really, really good for that attraction.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's working with that balance of higher technology, making it a more exciting attraction, but pulling in the nostalgia from even the original ride that was there, which was very different.
Yes, for sure. So, I'm excited to what Test Track will become, and hopefully it won't take too long for them to complete that, but excited for whenever it debuts again. Also, Walt Disney World announced VI pass holder days will return again this year from May 1st through June 26th. The offering for annual pass holders will include, quote, a limited time magnet, lounge, discounts, and more, end quote. More details about that are coming very, very soon.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. That was fun last year, too.
We happened to be out there a couple times during that.
Yeah, so I know.
It's going to work out for us. And finally, Disneyland After Dark Pride Night tickets go on sale this week. So if you're thinking about going to that, no, it's happening this week. They go on sale April 9th for Magic Key holders and April 11th for the general public. Ticket sales start each day no earlier than 9 a.m. Pacific time. Of course, this is a separately ticketed after-hours event that will be held in Disneyland Park on June 18th and 20th, 2024. I think it's going to be a very popular event.
Yes.
I wish we were going because it looks like it's just going to be over-the-top fun.
Yes.
It's so exciting. And so if you're thinking about going, and whatever's your earliest time to do it, you should try and get in there and get those tickets, because I really, really think that, especially with only two dates, it's going to go very, very quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a very popular one. And what, like you said, what they've shared for what to expect there is going to be great.
Yep. So, just pure fun, joy. Yes. It's going to be an amazing, amazing time. I wish we could be out there for it, but we will be just envious of everybody else who gets to go, because it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's it for the Disney stories of the week. However, we never leave you without giving you some sort of tip that might help you on your next vacation. And when we do this, we always start with Michelle because, well, you just heard it. She does the best research. You're going to hear it next week. We'll tell you about that in a little bit. She has the best lists. One thing is for certain, she always has the very best tip. So let's get to it. Here's Michelle's tip of the week.
Well, thank you, honey. I appreciate that. I'm going to try to keep it short and brief because I talked a lot already today. But my tip has to do, if you're staying at the Disney property resort, they do have activities at each of the locations, and they are different. So I do recommend you scouting out the board that gives you that information. They usually have one near the lobby and another one outside in, like, maybe by the pool area or by a little community room area. But check out what they do have, because they do have a lot of fun activities for the family that can really help make your stay there even a little more special. Some things are just our activities just for more fun, but some things you can do to create souvenirs to bring back home to remember your trip. And again, fun for the whole family.
Some of those souvenir ones are at an extra cost as well. Not all of them, but some of them. So take note of that. If you're thinking about doing that, don't want you to think you're getting something for free. You might have to pay a little bit, but it's something, like you said, that's a souvenir, the keepsake, that is wonderful to take home as part of your adventure out at Disney.
Exactly.
Yes. So Michelle's tip, always the best tip, especially better than mine this week, because I can't even take credit for this tip this week, but I saw it on Instagram and I thought, I tried to look back for it. I couldn't find it again to give credit to the actual person that had this idea, but I saw it and I thought it was phenomenal. So I wanted to share it with people as well. We know it's always fun to get those autographed books and get, you know, the character signatures, and that's magical on its own. Well, this family did something that I thought was very interesting, and it involved the people that really bring the magic on every Disney stay, visit, vacation, the cast members. They were taking their autograph books and going up to the cast members that made an impression on them, did something special for them, and had their autograph in the books. I thought that was a phenomenal idea. Yes. I mean, one, to make them special, let them know what they meant to you. And then you can always look back at this autograph and say, remember when so-and-so did this for that attraction and how wonderful that was.
Right.
Maybe even snap a picture to go with it. If the, you know, ask your cast member if they will be okay with it. One, the autograph, two, the picture.
Right.
But put them together and make something very special out of it. And then be sure and give the cast compliment as well, because that is just as important. But I think it will brighten the cast member's day.
Right.
It'll brighten your day and bring some very special parts to your Disney trip. I just thought it was a brilliant idea.
That is a brilliant idea. And I think it's a great lesson to, you know, teach folks to pay attention that there are so many components. What do they say? Every role a starring role. So many elements and people who are creating this atmosphere to provide joy and fun.
Yeah. I thought it was brilliant.
Yes.
I love the idea.
Love it.
Like I said, if you're listening, probably not, but if you are listening, please write us, send us a note, hit us, DM us, whatever. I'd love to give you actual credit for it because I thought it was a phenomenal idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything we can do to, make the cast members who make our stays, our visits, our vacations that much better, make their day that much better. I'm all for 100%.
Sure.
Well, yeah. So that's it for this week. Next week, well, as I've already mentioned, it's time for another list episode. Better yet, it's time for another music episode. Yep. We'll be visiting a topic that we've been told you enjoy, and we're excited to bring it back. Our favorite songs that we wish were Disney tunes. You may remember these episodes where we go into a genre or a decade or whatever and find those songs that maybe are big pop hits or whatever hits, but they're not really Disney tunes, but we talk about how we love them and how we think they could fit in the films or the attractions, whatever. It's always a fun experiment. And this time we're going back. We've done the 80s already. We've done the 90s already. We're going to go back a little farther and we'll hit up, you know, the platform shoes and the, you know, the bell bottom pants. We're going to go and do the 70s.
No way.
Yes. Lots of way. Yeah, you think of the 70s, there could be some great disco we're going to break out, but also some great R&B. There's some really good rock tunes in the 70s, of course. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see what we come up with for our, you know, songs of the 70s that we wish were Disney tunes.
It'll be interesting. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we'd love to hear your list, too. If you have any thoughts on it, please send them to us, social media, Gmail account, whatever. We would love to hear them, and we'll include them on the show
definitely,
as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, we appreciate that you joined us today. In the future, you can find us most everywhere you get podcasts. However, the very best place to find us is on our own website, HyperionAdventuresPodcast.com. Also, we are on social media. We're on Twitter at Hyperion Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. If you are on Facebook, come on over and join us for some good, positive Disney energy fun on our Hyperion Adventurers Facebook group. Also, we're on YouTube. If you want to find us there, we're at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. And if you ever want to contact us for any reason, please hit us up at our Gmail account, HyperionAdventuresPodcast@gmail.com.
And we would love for you to tell a friend or family member about this podcast.
Yep. Best way to get the information out that they may enjoy this show, just like hopefully you do. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Hyperion Adventures Podcast. We look forward to sharing some time with you again next week. Until that time, I'm Tom.
I'm Michelle.
And we hope that you have a magical week.
Bye.